Today is June 25th, 2009, and this is Charlene Hershey Simpson, and I'm interviewing Larry Whirlwind. Okay, Larry, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you're doing now?
I'm retired.
Okay.
And I do a lot of scroll sawing, which keeps me busy in the cold months of the winter and the hot months of the summer.
Where are you living now?
In Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Okay.
And we farmed for 30 years, and then I retired, and then we bought a farmhouse and remodeled that, sold it, bought another house and remodeled that one, and now we moved because it's just too much work.
Too much work. Okay.
It's brought me up to today, and
well, then the next thing that I want to do is I want you to think back to the year that you joined the Peace Corps and think about what you were doing before and how you heard about it and what made you decide to join.
Well, of course, that was in 1962, and I had been going with a gal for a year, and we were going to get married, and she decided that we weren't going to get married, but I had gone to diesel school in Milwaukee, and my instructor had been quite a bit around the world, and that's something I always wanted to do, so as soon as I wasn't tied down, I went and talked to him, and he called Washington, because he was a friend, Anyway, he called Washington for me and said that I'd like to join the Peace Corps. Mm-hmm. And they called me back, and a week later, they said, you go get your tickets down in Milwaukee, and you get your passport picture, and the tickets will be waiting for at the airport to go to Arizona to start training to go to Bolivia. Well, where the hell is Bolivia? I don't know, and I don't care. So I just want to go. And that's the way I started my training.
So you didn't really indicate any particular preference to where you wanted to go?
I wanted to go to Africa.
Uh-huh.
And I was really, well, that's one place that he had told me about, my instructor, and I thought it was really interesting and everything. But after I heard those guys trying to learn Swahili, well, I'm glad that we went to Bolivia.
All right. So tell me a little bit about the training. Can you describe some of the things that you went through there?
Well, we got to Arizona on the plane. I got off the plane, and I thought, why are they heating up this plane right in the middle of this airport? It was so hot. I have never experienced anything so hot. And that was the start of my training. Of course, then we lived in the stadium at Arizona University, Tempe, and that was hotter than hell, which I had never experienced. And then we lived on the reservation out in Arizona, and so...
Did you have any second thoughts about that time?
No. No, it was really interesting, and I never pursued the fact of traveling the world, but this was the opportunity and I wasn't looking back. Mm-hmm. So, and I encourage anybody that I meet today, or through all these years, that if they want to do something, is to join the Peace Corps, because that was the best experience of my life. Mm-hmm.
So, what exactly were you doing out there on the reservation?
We played with a bulldozer.
So you actually got to do something with a bulldozer.
Yeah, we leveled some land with a bulldozer, and seems like we did a lot of exercising. And one of the things that fascinated me most was that we could jump in the irrigation dishes with all our clothes on, get out and walk away and be dry in a short time. And of course, Larry Olsley, mm-hmm, was very fascinating when we walked along the drainage ditches, and he says, stop. Why should we stop? Well, there's a rattlesnake here. Oh, yeah? What's a rattlesnake? I have never heard of rattlesnake. And so we pound on the irrigation ditch, and out comes the rattlesnake, and he grabbed it by the head, and we took it back to the university with us after we found the sack and put it in.
Oh, my gosh.
So all the training out there, and it was very interesting. I visited the Indian Hogans and talked to some of the Indians there, and I still have a dish that I got from one of them, a clay pot that she gave me, and from Arizona, yeah, that was neat.
So what did you think of your fellow volunteers?
All very interesting. Of course, I roomed with Ezra Funk, who was, seemed like he was in his 90s then already, but I'm not sure. And Ralph Long, who was a very personable person. And actually, when Pete Niblis and I ended up together in Bolivia, I had never roomed with him or never had Spanish courses with him or anything else, but we ended up together in Bolivia, which was really great.
Mm-hmm. So after Arizona, then what happened? Can you talk about that?
Well, we went to, of course, that was the Cuban crisis. So we went to Florida. And from Florida, they sent us back to Brattleboro, Vermont.
What about Puerto Rico? Weren't you there?
Puerto Rico.
Arecibo?
Yes.
What did you think of that?
Well, that was that, yeah, that was in between. Well, that was very, the person that cooked the meals in Puerto Rico was an ex-army cook. And he said he's never seen a group eat more than we ever did. The food was the best. They had 5-gallon cans of grapefruit juice and grape juice and orange juice. And it was always colder and cold, and it was just delicious. But the training there was very interesting. Except for some of the houses we lived in. I never seen the family that I lived with. It was just a room. So I never got to meet them, or I really don't know if anybody else ever lived there.
You mean in Mayagüez, that must
in
have been.
In Mayagüez, yeah.
But because in Crozier, we lived in the tents.
Yeah, oh yes.
Did you participate in that? What was your least favorite or most favorite activity there of the physical activity?
The laying off the...
You really like that, huh?
The laying off the dam.
The dam.
Yes, I thought that was my greatest experience there. Something that I would never thought of trying to do, but after the other person did it by... I figured, well, if they can do that, I can do that.
Well, I figured if I was able to do it, anybody was able to do it.
Yeah, that was the... Uh-huh.
How about the hikes across the island?
That was interesting, and it was fun. It was all, every part of this, I lived on the farm, I just worked on the farm, and we'd never been, my dad wasn't a traveler, and why I grew up loving to travel, I don't know. But so every part of this whole process was just tremendously interesting to me. I never had a bad day. Mm-hmm. Never a day I didn't like. Or that, you know, I would rather thinking about going home or something mm-hmm. like that. There never was a day like that.
That's great. So after Puerto Rico, then what happened? Remember, I guess that's when we went home, right?
We all went home, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were supposed to meet back in Florida,
mm-hmm.
which we did. And of course, that was the Cuban crisis. Then they sent us to Brattleboro, Vermont. And
what about that experience?
Well, what did we do? We played cards. the country was beautiful. It was very nice weather, and of course then they sent us to Boston for the day to get to do something, I get us out of their hair, I guess, was what I heard. And My best experience there was talking to a Bostonian cop, asking him directions.
Really?
Yep.
So how did that go?
Well, between the two of us, and I can't remember just who I was with, when we walked away, did you understand what he said? And I says, nope, I didn't understand a word he said. He might have been talking Spanish for all I know. That was one thing in Puerto Rico. The Spanish instruction was superb. That fella taught us Spanish more than we learned in the state of Arizona State University.
That was at Mayagüez.
That was at Mayagüez.
Yeah.
That fella was terrific.
Yeah.
He taught us Spanish.
Okay, so now let's go back to when you finally arrived in Bolivia. What were your impressions of that?
I was sicker than a dog.
Because of the altitude?
The altitude just killed me. I had headache for so many days, and to me that was kind of a blur. We met the president, of course, mm-hmm. the whole group, and they took us someplace, which some of the fellows have talked about, but I really don't remember too much about it. The most I remember was leaving La Paz and starting out towards Cochabamba with our wagon train and getting gas.
Yeah.
Stopping for gas.
That
and
probably,
to drive down there.
That probably would have been notable for you, the way they had the gas available.
Yeah, that's for sure. It was a very primitive type deal.
Mm-hmm. So once you got to Cochabamba, then what happened? Can you talk about that?
Well, when we first got to Cochabamba, our coordinator, Claude Wolf, had places for us to all stay. So everything was kind of set. There was no messing around. We went right through the... I think that's about the first time I got connected with Pete Niblett, because we both lived out in the country in the same place. And so that, it just went like clockwork. Everybody went to their places, it seemed like. And we all had our jobs to start doing. I worked at the experiment station La Tamborada, and Pete worked at the plant, the peel plant, the milk producing plant, mm-hmm. testing milk. And so I went to the experiment station, and I worked with Feng Chao Si Mao, who was a Chinese, mm-hmm. and at the experiment station. And of course, I worked with the mechanics there, and doing various mechanic work. And in the afternoons, I had pretty much to myself, which I went out and worked in Irani with Bill Schenck, mm-hmm. and then with Pete Niblett, and we did various things. So that was pretty much a daily routine. When I went out to Irani with Bill Schenck during the agrarian reform, when they split up the farms to give land to all the campesinos, they had a cleat tractor there. They built a house around it, and there it sat, because nobody knew how to do anything with it.
Uh-huh.
So Bill says, well, do you think we could get it running? I said, well, let's go look at it. Well, news travels fast in a small town. So everybody came out to watch us look at it, and they thought, boy, this is going to start running right away. And I said, no, it's going to take a while. So we took the plugs out of it. I don't know how many years it had been standing there. But we took the plugs out of it and drained the gas and took the carburetor apart and various things. So it took a month before we went back and had it all back together again. And so then finally it came time to start it, and it started right up.
Wow.
And it amazed me as much as it amazed them. Well, you've never seen an adobe wall come out down so fast as those campesinos tore that wall down so we could drive that tractor out. And I took the tractor out, and they had I don't know, just, I can't remember, some type of field cultivator or something that was behind it. So the thing that always kind of bothered me, that these people always worked around these anthills. If there is an anthill that took up a section of the ground, they could have been working instead of destroying it. They never destroyed them. So when I got beyond that caterpillar, I ran every anthill down that was in the compound, and I worked up the whole ground that was... All these places have adobe walls around them, so they each had their own little land. I don't know what they did later on. But that fella's land was leveled from one end to the other because we ran all the anthills down and everything.
Well, they were just... the ants, or?
I really couldn't tell you anymore. I really don't remember. And then they had an Italian tractor out there with a one cylinder that you could change the heads on and run it on anything that was that was fueled.
Wow.
And we messed around with that for a while, got that running. And
they must have thought you were a mechanical genius.
Well, it sure surprised them, and it surprised me that cleat track started running again just like that. So then, and then in the afternoons, I worked with Peter a couple times. That, of course, he was in the farming and milk testing. Well, I think his game was Gamusio. Anyway, Peter had been there, and of course their weather was something like ours, that as soon as the hay got ripe, they had rain. So he was wondering how he could preserve this hay. And so Peter was talking to me about it, told him to build a trench silo. And Peter says, okay, tell him how to come build a trench silo. So we went up and talked to him, and I picked out a spot that I thought would be good for a trench silo and told him how to build it, and then I said, then fill it with hay, and he had a tractor there, and I said, run the tractor over back and forth to pack it down good so it didn't spoil. And he looked at me and he says, well, how about if we take these mahogany hammers? They were 12 by 12 by 18 inch blocks on a handle. And he says, how about if we pound this down with those hammers? And I says, well, geez, I suppose it would work. I says, but man, you know, that's a lot of work. Well, he says, I can get a few campesinos out here to work cheaper than I can put a gallon of gas in that tractor. Okay, whatever it takes. So he dug the silo, and we looked at it and everything and said, yep, that should work. And he cut his hay, put it in there, and they packed it down with these big hammers. And then winter time came, and I said, you know, when he needed feed, that's when he opened the silo up. Well, he didn't tell us that he opened the silo up. And he says, you know, they smelled it and everything, and phew, well, if you ever smelled grass silage, why, it doesn't have a very sweet odor to it. But once you get used to it, it's good smelling stuff. So they heat and hot around, and then they finally decided, well, what do they have to lose? They fed some to the cows.
The cows probably liked it.
Cows just loved it. Then they started milking, and then he called us up, and we went out and looked, and they had dug out quite a bit already. And he had about 4 inches of spoilage on top, which is normal. Keep the air from the rest of it. And that was our success after working for 15 months or something there.
Right.
That was, I always tell that story, and I said, you know, it took us almost the whole time we were in the Peace Corps to do that. So things didn't move too fast.
No.
But the people were...
Did the people understand how to do it so they could do it after that?
Oh, yeah. Well, as far as I know, they did.
Yeah.
Well, he saw the results, and he knew the way he built it, and how it worked and everything. And so course, it, about the time that got project got finished, or that he was using it, it was almost time for us to leave. It took that long for us to get that project going.
Things don't happen overnight.
They sure don't. They didn't.
Well, that sounds like a really fascinating project, Larry. Tell me what else, what other things come to mind when you think about the projects that you did. Either that did work or didn't work.
Well, not so much they didn't work. It just took forever to do anything. Like you say, in farming, you don't see results. It's like scientific experiments. It all takes time. So I always say the best thing that I got out of the Peace Corps or in Bolivia was what they taught me, not what I taught them. It's all what they taught me. The life that was there was very interesting. In Irani, when I visited Bill Shank, the thing I liked best was the goat cheese. And of course, our Dr. Gray says, you know, well, that's probably got so many germs in it that well, I survived so far. So, but the projects, I did various things, but nothing as good as the silo and getting those tractors started after for the 2 years we were there.
So, when you weren't working, what did you do?
Well, Peter had a friend that had some guns, so we went and hunting perdices, which is like a quail, and that was very interesting. We went down to Chapari, and there's friends of ours had a place down there along the river. We hunted alligators and ate alligators. And then I went with, you know, I can't remember just who it was, up in the mountains to one of their projects up there. And we went up there and gave smallpox shots to kids, and which they weren't too happy about, but we told them that we'd take their picture after we got all done. Well, then everything was pretty good because they wanted their picture taken. Of course, we didn't have cameras that you could see right away the picture that turned out, but just to get their picture taken was fascinating. And
did you do any traveling? outside of Bolivia?
We sure did.
So where did you go?
Well, Bill Shank and Pete and I went to Machu Picchu and went to Peru, and then Bill Shank went back and Peter and I went down to Chile, Santiago, Chile, and we rode the trains back up to Chile and back up to La Paz and took the bus back down to Cochabamba, which was a real experience if you've ever ridden your train. And we went on bus trips around Bolivia up to Potosí, and there were buses that ran on the railroad tracks down through part of the country, and we took those. And at that time, I learned to say "Imamanta Asi Kumki,"
which means,
"What are you laughing at?" Because I have odd shoes with a lift on them, and the campesinos would come up and they would talk about it, you know, and they were kind of laughing and everything, and Peter and I would wait for them to get closer and closer, and then I would say, "Imamanta Sikunki," and they would just fade away like it was. So that was one of our trips, and the other trip we went down to Brazil and Paraguay, down through Argentina, and we're always kind of taken as Argentinians, not Americans. So we've never heard anything about being American, but we're always heard things about us being Argentinians. So, but we saw a lot of the country, as much as possible. That was one thing that was really amazing because Peter and I had the same ideas. Mm-hmm. As far as we could go, as cheaply as we could possibly go. If we got into hotel rooms that smelled like Lysol, that was great. We knew that there was some disinfectant in them anyway. Mm-hmm. And of course, we got sick once in a while, but mm-hmm. not very much. Mm-hmm. But Peter and I traveled a lot, as much as we possibly could.
Mm-hmm. So if you think back about your time in Bolivia, other than, say, the silo thing and the tractors that you got resuscitated, what stands out in your mind that you remember? What kinds of things?
The people. The people were great. Mm-hmm. They were nice to us. They helped us. And they were, the people just fascinated me, and the way they worked. Mm-hmm. You know, that when you can see a fella take coat hangers and do welding with them, and that's all he's got, it really fascinated me because I would never dream of trying to weld with a coat hanger. But that's all they had for material, so that's what they used.
Mm-hmm. A lot of improvisation.
Yes. Yep. Everywhere. I mean, a tin can to those people was worth more than what was inside of it. Sure, the eight what was inside of it, but boy, when you had the tin can, you could do so many different things with it. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, where were you when Kennedy was assassinated? Do you remember that?
I was at the Tumbarata, and I didn't hear anything about it then. Until I came back to the family we lived with, and they said, well, are you leaving right now or are you leaving tomorrow? And we said, are we leaving? For where? Well, to go back to the States. And we said, no. And they said, well, why not? And we said, well, what are we going to do? And they said, things there will keep on going, the Peace Corps will keep on going. It isn't going to stop, and they couldn't believe it. So, and it's one of those things that happened.
Yeah.
But they were just amazed that we didn't turn and go right home after that.
So, after you got out of the Peace Corps, what did you do?
I went home. Bought the farm because my dad says either you buy the farm or I'm going to sell it. Well, that tied me down. And I continued working for on diesel engines. And because I had the farm and commitments, when they had the big earthquake in Alaska, I worked on a fella's truck that had come down and bought a brand new truck and was hauling it back to drive it back to Alaska. And I said, boy, I'd like to go. And he says, hop on. He says, I'll take you up there if you want to help drive. But he says, I'm leaving in the morning. And I said, well, give me one day to get things ordered. And he said, no, I can't do that. He says, I got to be on the road. So that opportunity went back. And of course, being tied down with the farm, I eventually met my wife and got married, and we spent 30 years on the farm. I've been married 40 years. Been married for 40 years. Didn't spend 30 years on the farm. I was a diesel mechanic, and then I retired, and so now we have 4 kids living near us with grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Because when I met my wife, I was 27 and kind of a ready-made family because she had 4 kids who were married. And later on, one of our sons passed away. So then we had our youngest son, Larry, Larry the Third, born in April, the same as my dad and I. So,
Larry, how do you think being in the Peace Corps, well, you told me already that you thought you learned more from the Bolivians than they did from you, right?
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
How do you think being in the Peace Corps changed the direction of your life?
Well, it gave me an insight to what life is like besides our own little corner of the world. Mm-hmm. And when people talk about poverty, that's one thing that always, you know, what is poverty? Explain poverty. In your form of life, or their form of life, or their part of the world? I mean, like in Cochabamba, you saw kids in rags and dirty, playing in the street, playing with whatever they had, having a good time, laughing, hollering. And I'm sure their life, you know, wasn't a joy, but they had good times too. And people say, you know, oh, they're so poor. Okay, they are in some respects, but to our type of living or to their type of living are they poor? They might have been the happiest kids in the world, who knows? So they never felt sorry for themselves. And of course they always came begging for us, you know. When Peter and I would walk downtown with candy or something, I would give them some candy. Because we were always buying candy, which I love. And talking and just ignoring them. And all of a sudden I motioned to Peter, look down. And he kind of looked down. Well, these two kids were laughing at each other and everything and making jokes walking alongside us. And all of a sudden they seen us looking at him, oh, pobrecito, pobrecito, you know. We just laughed and laughed. But that was quite an experience. So that's one thing. Poverty is, I don't know how to say it, but it's always, when people say those people in the other countries are so poor, by what standards do you consider them poor?
Well, that's an important insight.
That's the biggest insight. How so other people live.
If you had not gone in the Peace Corps, do you think that you would have done different things than what you ended up doing?
Well, I would have still tried to go overseas. I would have went overseas somewhere or other. Because that was one of the things that always interested me. And of course, my diesel instructor talked about it several times.
How old were you when you went into Peace Corps?
22.
Yeah, there were a bunch of us in about that age. Young, yeah. It was a pretty young group, I think.
Yeah, we're kind of the older, well, middle older ones.
Middle older.
It was the little bit younger, and then there was, of course, Ralph Long, who was quite a bit older. Who I enjoyed visiting very much after we got out of the Peace Corps.
I actually went to visit him too through in Oklahoma there.
Yeah.
On my way back to Texas. Okay. Well, have you been maintained any kind of contact with any of the people in Bolivia that you knew?
No, not at all. No, life just got going too fast.
Right.
Between farming and working at nights and everything, I always wanted to go back, but of course that money was always kind of short.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you think that being in the Peace Corps changed? It sounds like you did quite a bit with technical assistance with your silo idea and the tractors and things like that. And then you said that you thought you had learned a lot from the Bolivians, and that you feel like that they understood more about Americans because of being in contact with you.
Well, there's one family that we knew quite well, with four or five kids. And I mean, they were teenagers and etc. But I don't think I ever convinced them that my mother did her own washing and ironing and cooking on the farm. They just could not quite picture the fact that we worked the farm ourselves and that my mother did the things, you know, mm-hmm. herself. They just couldn't quite guess that she didn't have some maids to help her. Mm-hmm. Like, either in Bolivia, I think you were a maid or you had a maid, it seemed to me. So, that's one of the things that I don't know if I ever convinced them the way we lived or not.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's hard to tell, isn't it?
Yes, it's hard.
Yeah. So overall, you said in the beginning that it's an experience that you would encourage other people to do and that you would have done again had you had it to do over?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. All the time, anybody I've talked to that had the least interest in joining the Peace Corps, if anybody ever did, I really couldn't tell you. Mm-hmm. And Farm Progress Days, which we have in Wisconsin, and there are mm-hmm. some other places, mm-hmm. They invited me to join the Peace Corps group that was there mm-hmm. to talk to people, and it didn't last too long because it turned about 100 that weekend that they, or during the week they had it,
yeah.
And it was just so hot that it lasted one day and that was it.
Yeah.
But other than that, I've never really gone out for public speaking.
So tell me, Larry, from your point of view, why has this diverse group that was Bolivia II stuck together, maintained contact, do you think?
Well, I think we all kind of got the same set of values. Mm-hmm. There's nobody in our group that feels above anybody else, I don't think. And I know. I mean, mm-hmm. and really enjoy getting together. So it's some we see more often. Stopped and seen George Wright a couple times on our way down, but I guess it's just we were all pretty much in the same category, mm-hmm. I would say.
Even though they came from diverse backgrounds, there was
everybody's got a different background.
Usually it's not always the kind of group you would have been prepared to see maintain contact that much.
No, the first time we didn't go either. Mm-hmm. There was just too many things going on. We just couldn't get away. But then after that, we said, you know, well, I'm going to go. Whatever's going to happen, we're going to go. So that's always been enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's very enjoyable seeing all the fellows again.
Well?
And girls.
Do you have anything else you'd like to add that I haven't asked you about?
No, I guess not. I think that's pretty well covered there.
Okay, well.
It was just the most enjoyable experience that one thing I'm really glad that I didn't get married and spend the rest of my life there. Hard to say, but right now looking back, I think that's one of the best things that happened in my life was not getting married and joining the Peace Corps.
All right, well thank you, Larry.
Yeah.